All right, signs of Halloween here at Mr. Chubby's in Pontevedra. Big fan of the decorations, including all of the bar stools. You got, you know, cutouts of pumpkins and all that good stuff. Some eerie spiders and snakes and all that type of what have you. Love Halloween. I do. A new Halloween movie, right, coming out. Jamie Lee Curtis. I know you're not a horror guy. You've made that obvious. Baloo with Saunders as we get things rolling from our home away from home, especially on a Thursday night in Pontevedra at Mr. Chubby's. Do you like the Halloween get up here, though? I mean, I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, you know, of course, I always love, you know, Halloween and the get up for Halloween. I mean, my brother was born on Halloween, so it comes with the territory. So anytime that I see this stuff, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm always amused by the creativity of those who decorate for Halloween. I'm
trying to figure out what I love more. Halloween when I was a kid, and that was obviously in Boston, and it was very different there than it is around here. Because I really enjoyed, you know, the younger years of my daughters and picking out their costumes and all that great stuff and, you know, walking around with them. That was always a great time. But it was different in Boston. It was you know, a lot of mischief, a lot of battles, fights. I mean, not really fist fights, but throwing eggs at one another. And, you know, we used to steal aerosol caps from, like, the Kmart or whatever, so you could get distance on your shaving cream, so you could get your shaving cream to go, you know, maybe 8 feet ahead of you or 10 feet ahead of you. I don't really see any of that here in Jacksonville, and I'm happy for it. I mean, I look back at it now, and it just reeks of immaturity, but, you know, it was a totally different vibe then than it is now. But, you know, I really look at it three different ways. Then, in my adolescence, when I was an idiot, at Florida State, oh, my God, Halloween there was out-freaking-standing, because I think it just gives so many women the opportunity to literally just dress down. And what they're able to bring to the party and showcase is nothing short of excellence. So I got to look at those years and say, oh, my gosh, the parties were absolutely phenomenal. Yet I do think, believe it or not, rolling around with the girls and they were young and they loved it. It was probably the best of everything for Halloween. Of course, my little girls are grown up, so that's no longer the case. They don't want their daddy around when it comes time for Halloween. All right, enough with that. Let's get towards week six in the National Football League. It begins tonight. Big game again on the road for Tampa Bay. They are 4-1. Can they get it done in Philadelphia? You know, it's very interesting if you consider the league, you know, the league-wide trends that come into this matchup tonight. First of all, 8-8 again. Another weekend where it was right around 50%. Of course, 8-8 is exactly 50%. But if you look at road teams so far this year in the NFL, they have won more than they have lost. 41 victories for road teams so far this year. 39 victories for home teams so far this year. It's really unlike anything we've ever seen before. And if you go back to last season, it was the first time in NFL history during the 2020 campaign, and I thought at the time that this was certainly COVID-related, but you had the home team actually was one game under 500, okay? They won 127 games. The road team won 128 games. There was one tie. You can go to 2019. The home team, just with a slight margin, had a better record than the away team at 132, 123, and 1. And we're not talking against the point spread here. We're talking about straight up. And I know this is like the third consecutive week that I've mentioned it, because I continue to be absolutely baffled by it. I mean, on the other hand, look at tonight. Game 5, with everything on the line to move to the National League Championship Series. Is there a Dodger fan alive that would not want this game tonight at Chavez Ravine? It's not. it is in San Francisco instead. And whether it's on ice, whether it's on the court, or whether it is on a Major League Baseball diamond, the home field is everything. Even in college football, it is enormous. Yet in the NFL, it's just not registering this year. And it's really bizarre, at least in my opinion, because I think, you know, Tampa Bay tonight goes out and wins yet another road game. I expect them to win in Philadelphia. Now, they're injured. There's no doubt about it. They're missing some key players both offensively and defensively. So that'll be pretty intriguing. Tom Brady, oh, by the way, has an opportunity tonight, if he throws four touchdown passes, to put up 600 in his career. I mean, that is stupid. That makes no sense whatsoever. 600 career touchdown passes is what he is looking at tonight if they are able to get the victory. All right, a couple of other things to consider as we head towards this weekend. Three divisional games, including one in the AFC South, where Houston is going to Indianapolis. We have had so far this year, I saw this earlier today when I was looking at some league-wide trends. We've already had 19 games where the winning score either happened in the final minute of regulation or overtime. Now, the Jaguars have been involved in a couple of those games, but 19 early on. I mean, we just added up the games, right? I have it at, what do I have it at? What did I just say one moment ago? 41-39, okay? So that'd be 80 games. 19 of the 80 games in the NFL so far this year have ended in the final minute or in overtime with the decision coming then. I mean, this league is absolutely incredible if you look at it that way. We've already had 8 overtime games so far this year. We've had 21 games that have been decided by 3 points or less in the NFL. Jacksonville, right on the cusp of that. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of 3, maybe 3.5 points, depending on who you look at and where you go, as the Jaguars are headed towards London right now for their matchup against the Miami Dolphins. That'll be Sunday with toe meeting leather coming up at 9:30. Certainly looking forward to that matchup here. Again, we're not traveling, and, you know, it's a long trip. Miles Jack's not going to make it. Okay, he's got a bad back. That's an issue for him. He's not going to travel to London. I don't know what the Jaguars are going to do now to try to spell him in coverage. And I was actually very surprised earlier today when I was looking at pass coverage rankings and pass coverage ratings, I guess I should say. Because when I typically look at that, I spend all my time on the corners or the nickel, or certainly the safeties. It's not too often where I really give it my undivided attention when looking at coverage with linebackers, but I did today. Miles Jack, his rating right now is 144.8. I mean, it's absolutely awful, okay? Damian Wilson is even worse, 152.3. Today, Joe Cullen talked about how difficult it's been for this Jaguars team to defend crossing routes. That has been a problem all season long. And if you are, you know, mixing and matching or switching, whether it's with linebackers or with safety play, that really hurt them going back, if you remember, the Arizona loss. And it also came into play this past week against Tennessee. So I guess it's Dakota Allen. He's the next man up. I got to imagine he will be the linebacker on the field, even though Damian Wilson at times did have that green dot on. If you are going to continue to have him with that responsibility, because Rayshon Jenkins had it as well as a safety. Remember, you can only have one guy with it on the field at one time. That is communication that comes in from Joe Cullen or anyone else on the Jaguars sideline. You know, I think you got to take Wilson out. Even if he is the green dot, he can't cover. He's very good against the run. I mean, he's a run-stuffing machine. Very good in that aspect. But you lost your best coverage linebacker and Joe Schobert. You peddled them. And now all of a sudden, you have an unhealthy Miles Jack who can't go. There were times last week where Jacksonville was lining up two middle linebackers in their defensive scheme, where you had Shaq Quarterman, who, again, very good against the run. He's not a coverage linebacker. And then you look at Damian Wilson, same deal. So, you know, I think scheme and personnel in this game, it has to be spot on. You can't afford to be disorganized. You can't afford to have the lack of communication, the lack of understanding, if you are able to go on out and win a football game. This is a very, I like using the term whenever it's available. It's a winnable game. Miami's not a good football team. I mean, they have glaring holes all across their roster. And you look at them statistically speaking, they really stink. They have the worst third down defense in the NFL. They have the worst rushing offense in the NFL. They're not even averaging 16 points a game. They're giving up 31 points a game. Granted, they face some tough competition. You know, a couple of absolute playoff teams, including Buffalo and Tampa this past weekend against the Bucs. But, I mean, I really believe this is there. I think Jacksonville is going to get their first win of the season. I'll say it right now on this Thursday. And I'm saying that considering you are without two-fifths of your offensive line with Brandon Linder and A.J. Cann. You are without arguably your best defensive player in Miles Jack. I have to believe Tyson Campbell is going to come back and play. He wasn't available a week ago. And, you know, I know for some of you out there that that's not going to do much for you. You've been down on him, and, you know, he has trouble locating the ball. And, hey, listen, I get it. I understand, in fact, what you're trying to say. Roy Robertson-Harris, all right, he's missed three games now. The ankle, hopefully you'll be able to beef things up a little bit along that defensive line. And, again, this is not a good Miami offensive line. It is one that you should be able to expose with quarterback hurries, pressures, and hopefully sacks. And I thought that would be the case last week against the Tennessee offensive line, which has really been poor. You go back two Sundays ago, the New York Jets, the awful Jets, had seven sacks against Tennessee. Jacksonville last week able to only muster three. So it's right there, but you can't make in-game mistakes, and this applies to the coaching staff as well as to the players. The staff has to have these players in the right position. You can't have your first target going to Laviska Shenault in the fourth quarter. No! Find a way. Get them the football. Okay? You can't give only six carries to James Robinson in the fourth quarter in a game where the run is still prevalent, for crying out loud. No! You can't have it. You got to fix it. So will they get it done coming up in London on Sunday? I happen to think they will. But as always, I want to get your opinion on it. 641-1010 on the text line, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. You can also get me on Twitter. That is Blue1010XL. All right, opening statement or comments always brought to you by my good buddy Lou Bodie at Capital Financial Strategies. His number is 626-7995, 626-7995. He has spent the last 20-plus years as the senior financial advisor right here in Jacksonville. His practice is centered on financial planning and education for his clients. This includes strategies on investments in retirement. Hey, the market's been crazy lately, and I check it daily just like you do. And Lou's been aggressive. Lou's done some nice things, okay? It has been a lot of fun to watch the way he is handling it. I can't believe you're not taking advantage of this right now. It's a free consultation. It's a free look. All right? Your money. Watch it grow. Call Lou Bodie today 626-7995. All right, we got plenty to do right here on this Thursday night. Rick Ballew with RJ Saunders. We are live from Mr. Chubby's in Ponte Vedra. Here's the deal. 2-for-1 drafts, 2-for-1 pitchers. That includes Miller Lite. $3 Wells, $3 Wines. Also, regardless of the game that you are looking for Saturday, right here at Mr. Chubby's, Big Ten Network, ACC Network, SEC Network, ESPN+. There's a college football game that you want. They'll have it here on one of their 40 television sets. And they're up right now with the PGA Tour burning. We've got a huge game tonight in the NFL as well as in Major League Baseball. So we'd love to see you out here in Ponte Vedra at Mr. Chubby's. Let's get things started right here on this Thursday. Lots going on as we go into the night.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, those phenomenal incentives continue at Key Buick GMC. You know about that. And I will add that new vehicles are arriving daily. You got some of these operations out there, you know, enter the used car salesman. It's the only car in the lot, and they're telling you it's got to go, man. I've never seen a vehicle like that. COVID really affected a lot of things. But they have vehicles arriving daily. They're also your service headquarters, okay? Very fast and convenient. So with the holidays upon us, I mean, blink twice, man, they'll be here. Okay, I already mentioned Halloween. Yeah, is that a holiday? No, it's still a great day. I don't know if you're heading out of town for that. You could. But certainly, you know, November and December will fill with them. So make sure you have everything done with your vehicle before you get set to travel for the holidays. As always, complimentary pickup and drop-off at Key Buick GMC right across the street from Tinseltown. That is Southside and Kate. I want to get to Daryl Bevel here because, we have finally some answers on the quarterback sneak. And, you know, I kind of weighed this today after I heard the presser. I was like, is it time to move on? You know, it's Thursday, and now the focus is on Miami. But we heard Urban Meyer, and then we heard Trevor Lawrence, and they clearly were not on the same page. I felt as though we still need to hear from Daryl Bevel about this. At least that's the way I feel, and I think that you would come along with me there. So I want to play a couple of things. But, you know, I just want to give you this real quick. All right, and this isn't a isolated comment. I get this stuff all the time. And I'm sure every host on this network, or excuse me, every host on both these channels get this all the time. It says, Blue, I don't think the Jaguars media realizes how awful and horribly coached the Jags team is. They are going to get killed by the Dolphins. Miami has two top-notch cornerbacks. One, by the way, didn't practice again today, Xavier Howard. He's been out the last couple of days. We'll see if he's able to go. But I'll continue what you said. They will shut down the garbage receivers. We have the Dolphin is a physical team. They have linebackers that run downhill, and they are thumpers. Somebody please tell Trevor Lawrence not to run on Sunday. All right, the reason why I mention that right now is at the top, what did I really elaborate on? Having the right personnel in, running the right scheme. I never thought that in the fifth game of the year, we would be questioning this coaching staff the way that we are. Game one was brutal, okay? 51 pass attempts by Trevor Lawrence, 5 carries by James Robinson. But I think in a way, there was a little bit of a mulligan there. There was. There was a tiny, all right, they weren't ready. And it felt like in game, in my opinion now, it felt like in game 2, 3, and 4, the coaching got better. There were some examples of, you know, there were a couple of head-scratching moments. Certainly, that goal line on Thursday night at Cincinnati. But it really reeked over the weekend. And offensively and defensively, it just looked like this coaching staff needs to be better. I mean, we talk about players being better all the time. The coaching staff needs to get better. And if there is a sizable difference between the Dolphins staff and the Jaguars staff on Sunday, Dolphins are going to win this game. I still think, for the most part, there are some good coaches on this staff. I think Joe Cullen, even though he's a first-time defensive coordinator, is a very good coach. I like Daryl Bevel, and I know people say, oh, Daryl Bevel, you know, I mean, why did he pass the ball in the Super Bowl before Malcolm Butler picked it off? He should have ran beast mode, and he had Marshawn Lynch. Okay, he won a Super Bowl as well the year before that. And Daryl Bevel had a very high-octane offense the last couple of years with Matthew Stafford and company in Detroit. I'm not giving up on him, but it's out there. This has to be a better-called game. Personnel has to be in a better position if they are going to win this football game against the Dolphins. But anyway, let's take you through it. If you didn't hear it, I want to play a couple of clips here from Daryl Bevel because it finally kind of puts to rest everything about the quarterback sneak after, you know, we were getting it from two different angles, one, the Urban Meyer side and then the Trevor Lawrence side. So Daryl Bevel talked about that today, and the first thing he got into was that, frankly, he just wasn't comfortable running the sneak.
I was not comfortable putting him in that situation without having enough reps built up. My job each and every week as we go out here, we put a game plan in, we practice the game plan. There's times during the week, it's like, you know what, that play is not game ready. I can't put that in this game. And so we'll continue to practice it maybe for the next week, you know, and so there's always a point where I have to decide, is a play game ready? And, I didn't feel like that play was game ready. So we'll continue to work on that.
All right. So there's some clarity. There's your answer. Now, I can imagine that most of you driving right now in your vehicle are probably pounding the steering wheel saying, it's a quarterback sneak. Practice it. You know, again, we're not talking about the old 39 periwinkle here where you got guys in motion and a lateral here. I mean, you're talking about a quarterback sneak. And we've heard from so many different people this week, you no longer practice it live. Those days are gone. But anyway, that was his answer. Let's continue with it. Here's Daryl Bevel telling us, telling the media, which in translation is there to get to you, the Jaguar fans, why a quarterback sneak is different in the NFL.
Trevor Lawrence is capable of doing, you know, anything that we ask, right? But the second thing is, I think this goes back to our conversation early, right, from all these college quarterbacks coming into the NFL, okay? Because I think it's like, hey, it's a quarterback sneak. What's the big deal, right? But there's a lot of nuances to a quarterback sneak. And then, obviously, the first and foremost one is even getting the snap. So, have never put the guy in a live situation, okay? Like, it's even different if it's a third and one in the field as opposed to a fourth and one, you know, or fourth and inches on the goal line. Now the center's in a four-point stance. That snap's going to come up different.
He's starting to make some sense. His reasoning, to some degree, is believable. It's acceptable. But again, I'll go back to what I said a moment ago. It's a quarterback sneak. And how can you not be prepared for that? Okay? I mean, we watch a guy tonight, we'll watch him in Tom Brady, who has mastered the quarterback sneak. There are others that have not been good with a quarterback sneak. When you look at the size of Trevor Lawrence, okay, 6'4.5", 6'5", whatever it is he's over 6'5". Okay, he should, I mean, he's what, 6'5.5", 6'6"? Let me look at the roster here just to be sure here, just to defend my point. Here's the Jaguars roster from Sunday. Trevor Lawrence, crying out loud, I got to flip the card.
I'm seeing 6'6".
You're seeing 6'6". I'm never going to argue with R.J. Saunders. Trevor Lawrence, 6 foot. He's a rookie from Clemson, played his high school football out at Cartersville, Georgia. 6'6". Run the snake. Run it. He's 6'6". This man's football IQ is off the chart. Urban Meyer told us he checks every box. I mean, you don't believe they know how to run a quarterback sneak? And the second part of that for me would be, why haven't they practiced it? It's a huge play. The Jaguars have been a very poor team when it comes to their red zone offense year after year after year. I remember 2 years ago, because I would talk about it all the time, it was a record-setting year for rushing touchdowns. There was something like 225, 230, 235 rushing touchdowns all year, and Jacksonville had two. Okay? That's going back to the 2019 season. And, you know, they've gotten better there, obviously, with James Robinson, but, you know, he wasn't on the field either. So, final thought on this, and, you know, his comment about the snap. What does that mean? All right, you snap a football, you're under center. You snap a football, you're in shotgun. According to Daryl Bevel, snapping the ball is different on a quarterback sneak.
I just think it's something that's taken for granted, you know, to be quite honest with you. I mean, I played the position, you know, I've been down there in a fourth and one, and I took snaps my whole life. I started under center, right? And knowing on the goal line, it just, the ball comes up different. I mean, the guys are, you know, they're nose to nose on the goal line, and the collision's a little bit different. The center's in a 4-point stance, that's a little bit different. And so all that stuff, it messes with the ball, and then you have to possess the ball, you know, and get that first before you can do anything else. So, you know, I'm not trying to make too big of a deal of it, but I do want, you know, it is taken for granted a little bit. Like, oh, yeah, it's just a quarterback sneak. Just get the ball and go. And, you know, it's something I think that that really needs to be worked.
Was that Gene's cell phone that went off during the presser? It's crystal clear. He's not comfortable with this. He wasn't comfortable with it. And he continues not to be comfortable with it. There's really no other way to say it. And it sounds like football 101. Again, I never played the game at this level. I don't know. It sounds so easy to me. And I think it sounds so easy to you. And I have spoken this week on the air as well as off the air with people who really know the game. Okay? And understand each and every nuance that goes into it. And it hasn't been described to me the way that Daryl Bevel described it. So, let me ask you straight up now. Are you a buyer or a seller on this? Do you feel any better about it? It still doesn't explain why James Robinson was on the field. And we could play that, but I'm going to let that go. I wanted clarity on the quarterback sneak, and he gave it to us. I don't know if it changes. If you have a fourth and goal this week in London, after what I just listened to there, I don't think they go quarterback sneak with Trevor Lawrence. You go back and you watch that film. Defensively, Mike Vrabel and company, they knew exactly what was going on. They shifted right before that ball was snapped. And you had guys flying to Carlos Hyde. Okay? The A-gap was open. And we talked about that with Denny Thompson last night, our quarterback whisperer. If you ran the sneak, it would, and he handled the ball, okay, it's a touchdown. The gap was open. Somehow, Tennessee knew they were not going to run that sneak. Now, obviously he was in a shotgun, okay, and maybe that had a lot to do with it, but we saw the shotgun a week ago against Cincinnati where, you know, he was supposed to run an option and there wasn't a block made on the right side, the combination of Taylor and the tight end, and that was blown up, so Lawrence was forced to cut it up and try to take it in for six himself, and of course, he was stuffed just short. So, you know, I think I'll let this roll now until something like this comes up again. But I always enjoy asking Jaguar fans when you hear the answer to the questions, how do you feel after the fact? And you have that ability right now to do just that. Get us on the text line. That is 641-1010, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. All right, coming up next, let's do both the Jags and the Gators. Demetrius Harvey covers both, and he joins us as we go into the night right here with Rick Bullitt.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, Pontevedra's, Mr. Chubby's. What an evening out here. Indoor, outdoor dining. We'd like you to come on by. All right, 2-for-1 drafts, 2-for-1 pitchers, includes Miller Lite, $3 wells, $3 wines. 40 television sets and Halloween decorations. What more could you possibly ask for? Maybe Demetrius Harvey, perhaps. Yes, wears a couple of hats. Of course, he covers the Jags beat for Big Country, and Big Cat Country, and he also is the deputy editor with SI All Gators, and he goes into the night with Rick Ballew. Demetrius, good to have you with us. How you been?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for having me on.
It's good to talk with you once again. All right. You know, I just spent about 4 or 5 minutes, maybe even a little bit longer, on Darrell Bevell after what he said today as far as the quarterback sneak. I just want your 2 cents on it. Did you come out of it feeling any differently after his very long explanation today?
Yeah, I mean, I felt like Darrell Bevell had some sort of he had that planned in his mind. I mean, obviously he heard the press conferences that went on. He heard all the hoopla that went around it after, you know, of course, Urban Meyer said that Trevor Lawrence wasn't comfortable with doing the quarterback sneak, and then Trevor came out and said he was comfortable, and then, you know, Urban came out the next day saying, well, it's not that he's not comfortable, we just haven't done it live, and a whole bunch of other stuff, and it's kind of become a big deal when it really shouldn't be. I mean, this is, it's as Bevell said earlier, you know, it is a situation where you do need to have the quarterback, especially coming from a college system, understand the nuances of a quarterback sneak. It's not going to look perfect just because the guy is 6'6" or however tall he is. But I do believe that the way that they've been sort of brushing it aside or saying, you know, how that they shouldn't be able to run it or they can't run it, that's not necessarily the case. I mean, Trevor Lawrence can run the quarterback sneak. I don't think that there's a huge issue with him doing it, even if they do say that he needs to practice it live a few more times. I mean, it's one of the most fundamental plays in football, and I get it's not as simple as that, but it sometimes can be a little bit more simpler than, you know, you might make it out to be. Now, when you look at the situation that was at hand during the, you know, during the time when people wanted them to run it, that 4th and 1, the fact that they hadn't run it, I can understand them being a little bit more hesitant. So they actually have never run a quarterback sneak with Trevor this season. They don't know exactly how he's going to take it. Now, would he have gotten in? Who knows? But I do understand their hesitation or reservations with doing so. But I don't think that there should be ever an option where it just is completely thrown out simply because they hadn't run it. I mean, you have to run it at some point. So, I mean, what better time than when you actually need it?
You know, Demetrius, outside of the opening matchup against Houston where they threw it 51 times and James Robinson only had 5 carries, I actually think that the growth of Trevor Lawrence and what Darrell Bevell, I think he's off to a good start. Yeah. Outside of what has happened on goal line. I mean, we can go to Cincinnati, we could go Thursday, and, you know, even the dime that Trevor Lawrence threw, the touchdown pass to Jacob Hollister in the corner of the end zone for a touchdown. Then later again from the 5, they throw it twice, and then Lawrence, you know, is tackled at the half-yard line, if you will. This really seems to be the biggest concern so far for Jacksonville. Once they get down there, there's got to be better play calling.
Absolutely. I feel like between, you know, the 20s and even toward the 10-yard line, they've been pretty good. They've been very efficient, especially outside of the first game. Obviously, that was just a situation where they're just trying to get their feet wet. They don't really know each other, basically. But over the last few games, yeah, you've seen the progress from Trevor Lawrence, and it's been great. I mean, I would count last game as a turnover-free contest. Obviously, he doesn't because he did have the one interception at the very end. But if I'm looking at it objectively, you know, Trevor has taken care of the ball perfectly. Daryl Bevel, in my opinion, has called great games over the past couple of weeks. I think that once they get down to the goal line, you know, that area tightens up. You know, it shortens up, and that's always been sort of an issue for offensive coordinator Daryl Bevel. When you look at his time in Seattle, you know, everybody thinks about that play call in the Super Bowl where he throws it instead of, you know, giving it to Marshawn Lynch. Now, I'm not saying that it's going to be an issue forever, but for offensive play callers, that's probably one of the toughest play calls to make, is when you're that close near the goal line. It might be third down. You could run or pass, and there's just a bunch of different situations. But you referred to the Hollister touchdown, and that was actually a fantastic play call. It was risky, but it was fantastic because they come out in bunch basically with, I think it was three tight ends, and then you have James Robinson. They force the other team, the Titans, to pull out all their linebackers, their big guys. So you have favorable matchups when you come out and spread it all out and go empty. So then now Trevor Lawrence is able to get the ball off, you know, in a one-on-one situation with Hollister, who's athletic and is able to make that catch. Now, if it doesn't, you know, if it goes incomplete, everyone is very upset because you have James Robinson in there. But it didn't, because it was a smart play call, and Trevor Lawrence can make those types of throws. But I agree with you. I think that the progress has been incredible, and I think that, you know, it's just going to keep getting better from weeks to come.
Game comes up at 9:30 on Sunday. The matchup, of course, is in London. We're talking with Demetrius Harvey, who covers the Jaguars. He is on their beat with Big Cat Country, Jacksonville, and Miami, right here on 1010 on the AM, 92.5 on the FM. Game starts at 9:30. All right, DJ Chark goes out, and there's a concern, and Jamal Agnew goes from 8 snaps to 41, very effective again. I thought Tavon Austin played a nice game. We're learning more and seeing more good things from Dan Arnold. So, you know, they pass the, you know, they pass go there on all three areas, but then all of a sudden you look at Laviska Shenault, who's not targeted until the fourth quarter, and you know, not a good day for Marvin Jones Jr. I think some credit here, Demetrius, has to go to Tennessee's defensive backs. They did a real nice job in man coverage. But how alarming is that right now, that all of a sudden Jacksonville doesn't appear that they can get open downfield?
Yeah, it was very alarming on Sunday. When you go back and look at the game card, you'll see, you know, guys like Jamal Agnew, Tavon Austin, Dan Arnold, all capable players, but those should not be your three most targeted players in a game-to-game basis. I mean, Dan Arnold perhaps because he's a tight end, quarterback's best friend, but you definitely want to see guys like Marvin Jones up there in targets and catches. You want to see Laviska Shenault up there in targets and catches. Laviska Shenault was only targeted three times on the game. Now, yes, you're right. You know, a credit does go to Tennessee, but that wasn't a world-beating Tennessee Titans secondary. You know, they had a couple guys already out. They've been struggling on defense this season. It shouldn't have been as difficult as it looked to get these guys open. Bevel talked about it today. You know, he has to figure out ways to get Shenault the ball more. You saw it. He had that, what looked like was going to be just a 20-yard reception downfield, and turned it into, I think, 58 yards and almost scored on the same play because he's so good at breaking tackles and getting free. So if you can get the ball in that guy's hands more, I think that you're just going to have a great time. But you're right. It's concerning. I think that, you know, before the season, it was funny. I remember we were talking about it. We thought that the receiving group was probably going to be their best or right. One of their best on the team. And no, it is not like that this season.
No, it has been a huge disappointment. All right, one more here on the Jags, because I want to pick your brain as well on Florida going to Baton Rouge. That game, of course, coming up on Saturday at high noon. You know, I watched three Miami games. I watched them last week against Tampa. You just look at their numbers. They're awful. They can't score. They can't defend. This really sets up perfectly for Jacksonville to snap this streak.
Absolutely. This is the game. I mean, when you're looking at all the games that are coming up, I mean, they have Seattle in a couple weeks. I know it's going to be without Russell Wilson, but come on. And then you have Buffalo. Those two are not favorable matchups, regardless of who's playing. So when you look at this game against Miami in London, which is a place where some Jaguars are familiar with, it should be pretty even matchup in terms of home field advantage or whatever. It's a perfect situation for them to get right, get their win, kind of get away from it all and everything, and then hit the bye week on a high note. You know, the first ever win for Lawrence, the first ever win for Urban Meyer. I think that you're right. That this is a perfect setup for them. Miami has been struggling, and the Jaguars have an opportunity.
Yeah, and I think it happens. I'm perhaps overconfident here. We'll see. Going to London with a bye to follow is bad news for a coach who is on the hot seat. That's kind of like entering the Bermuda Triangle, if you will. I don't think there's a chance that anything happens unless they are just absolutely, you know, blasted by Miami, a 44-7 type game. What do you think? Win or lose, what do you think happens to Urban Meyer?
Yeah, if they win, obviously he's 100% going to stay. And I think that even if they lose, he'll most likely stay. I mean, depending, like you said, maybe if they lose maybe 50-0 or something insane where it just looks like obviously this is not the right call. I think that if anything, Urban Meyer, if he was going to be fired or if he was going to resign, it would have happened last week and not this week. I think that they're just going to go ahead and see the season out, barring anything crazy happening, which you never know with this team. So we'll see how it goes. But I think that this week is going to be win or lose. I think Urban Meyer is going to still be the head coach.
I was going to say before the victory over Alabama, Demetrius, this past very late Saturday night, that the two biggest disappointments this year in the SEC were LSU and Texas A&M. Well, A&M gets off the schneid, even though they lost a couple in a row before that victory. Boy, it's getting really rough on LSU and Ed Orgeron right now. And yeah, they're going to be without a couple of their really good defensive players, a couple of corners. Their best wide receiver is out. Florida, sizable road favorite. What's your outlook on this game coming up Saturday at noon?
Yeah, I think Florida's a 10-point favorite the last time I checked, and I think that that's reasonable. I mean, Florida, for all they've done, they've been a major disappointment, at least in my eyes as well. If you look at just, you know, the expectations heading into this year, for them to lose to Alabama is one thing, but for them to lose in the way that they did against Kentucky, and then to play kind of, I wouldn't say poorly in the game against Vanderbilt because they beat them 42-0, but the game certainly wasn't something where you're coming out of the game going, oh, man, that was amazing Florida performance throughout the entire 60 minutes. I think they have a lot to clean up. I think that this game against LSU is a very good barometer game for them. This is a bad LSU team, like you said. I think that this is probably Ed O's last season, which is remarkable when you think about the 2019 season. But, yeah, this game against LSU in Baton Rouge and at 12 p.m., I think that it's a favorable matchup for Florida. I think that they're going to come out there and play to their strengths, run the football, play sound defense, and I think they've got it going on. But it's really a great barometer game. If the Gators don't come out and win by a lot, I would be disappointed as an observer, or if you were a Florida fan, I would be very disappointed just because this team should not be losing or even only winning by a little bit against this LSU team.
All right, let's wrap it up with the obligatory Anthony Richardson comment. If this is a tight game, it's a one possession game, is he getting any burn? If it's a blowout, I expect it, but what if this is a tightly contested contest?
It depends totally on how Emory Jones is playing. I mean, we've seen Dan Mullen just is not keen on pulling quarterbacks without it being for a reason. So if he has a game plan going in, every couple drives you're going to put in your backup, then he's going to go ahead and do it. But it seems like there's a very long leash on Emory Jones, and we've seen that. You know, against Kentucky, he wasn't playing the best. And I know that Anthony Richardson was still coming back from a hamstring, but at the same time, you do want to have that explosive player in there, the player that you know that can make incredible plays on a down basis. So we'll see going in, but I think that unless Emory Jones is playing just so poorly where just, you know, anybody with a mind would put their backup in, then I'm just going to say that, you know, Emory's probably going to close it out and win, and I think that they're just going to keep running the football more than anything.
All right, we'll see, and you're right. That high noon will certainly be a factor in that game. That favors Florida. I've been to Baton Rouge at night. That is a nasty place to play a college football game. Demetrius, always a pleasure. Enjoy all these games, and we'll do it again real soon.
I appreciate you having me on, man.
There he goes, Demetrius Harvey. Good stuff there. Covers the Jags beat for Big Cat Country. Also is the deputy editor with SI All Gators. Deputy editor. That's a very cool title.
Yeah, that's very powerful.
Well, it just sounds different.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I when I grew up in Boston, there were police officers. There were cops. Then all of a sudden I got down here and I learned about a sheriff. And I was like, man, that just sounds intimidating.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
They're going to give you a ticket.
He, Demetrius Harvey, he's not the editor of SI Alligators. He is the deputy editor. So I don't know. I don't know what that means, but it's cool. I'm all in the titles. And, you know, I've done 8 years now as the sideline reporter for the Jacksonville Jaguars. I wonder if I could send in a request and ask for something. How about sideline analyst?
The Don analyst.
The Don analyst.
Because you're a big Godfather guy.
So. Yeah, but not during the game on the sideline.
Why not?
Do it. Deputy editor, though. Very cool. All right. Good. And that is a good point with that Gator game. I mean, that is a big – to me, that's worth something. Because when those Baton Rouge fans get all liquored up, that is a very tough environment to play in. And, you know, right now, this is a game where LSU must circle the wagons. They have to pull off this upset. It's amazing how things have turned, how quickly they have. I mean, he was everyone's hero, Ed Orgeron, a couple of years ago. And, you know, obviously you lost one of the great offensive coordinators in college and now pro football, you know, calling the shots. Brady's now calling the shots, Carolina. I think that he would be a guy that they would love to bring back. I think the whole Lane Kiffin situation will be mentioned. I think a former Gator and Billy Napier will be mentioned. And, you know, I'm one of those that's going to stay with it because I have since he left Florida State. I'm not going to say that Jimbo Fisher won't come into play at LSU. I always maintained if Jimbo got good enough at Texas A&M, he would grab one of the other three jobs in the Southeastern Conference Western Division. Alabama, well, it looks like Nick Saban's not going anywhere. Auburn, they just made a coaching change. In LSU. So, you know, he's got 6 years remaining on the deal. And we shall see, but it definitely is something to consider. All right, we'd be getting a lot on the text line. Let's continue with that in our second hour. The number for you is 641-1010 on our text line, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. Let's come back and take a look at everything, recap everything that's happened so far, and again, get some comments from you. Later in the hour, we'll head out to Las Vegas. We'll hear from Rafael Esparza. We'll find out where the money's going on that Florida-LSU game. Also, obviously, Jacksonville and Miami. How about this? It's going to be the 30th game in London. They've never had a game there that has had two winning clubs. Never. And, oh, man, this lineup has a 0-5 Jacksonville against a 1-4 Miami. And, you know, I mean, tough draw. I don't know what you would say. But 30 games? And you have never had that. For what it's worth, this will be the 8th trip that the Jaguars have made. This will be the 5th trip that Miami has made. Now, I was crunching numbers today. There's 26 guys on the Jaguars roster who has played in London, including 15 who's played over there with the Jags. But then all of a sudden, A.J. Cann's not going. Miles Jack's not going. Brandon Linder is not going. So some injuries, unfortunately, coming into play for the Jags. We got a lot to do. Our second hour right around the corner. Good to have you with us. My name is Rick Bowie, along with RJ Saunders and Michael Phillips. This is 92.5 FM.
Into the Night with Rick Bowie on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
All right, we are back. Hour number two, live from Mr. Chubby's. Great to have you with us. Rick Ballew, RJ Saunders. The Rolling Stones are now touring. They're in Nashville. I see that they will no longer play the song Brown Sugar. That has been canceled. Very controversial song. And that'll no longer be a part of the Rolling Stones set. So I think that was announced yesterday. Reportedly, Mick Jagger was out. He kind of Pearl Harbored, if you will, or ran into a bachelorette party out there and started doing karaoke on stage and all that good stuff. I wonder if it's true, or I wonder if it's just one of those tall tales. Anyway, we shall see. All right, what do you got out there tonight so far? I know you're a busy man. You got a lot of good stuff happening on Twitter. What's the most popular one, and are we getting any heavy reaction on it?
Absolutely. On this Thursday night live from Mr. Chubby's Into the Night with Rick Ballew, we've kind of been asking this question since week one, and I've always wanted to ask it as we get closer and closer to game day. So we ask it like this. How many points do you think Jacksonville has to score in order to get a win and get their first win of the season? As of right now, 63% of the vote says that the Jaguars need to score between 21 and 28 points in order to get the victory. If you guys want to answer that, you guys can go on Twitter at 1010XL or hit us up on the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures, 641-1010, and give us your final score prediction.
Jacksonville has not scored more than 21 points all year.
It's crazy.
They scored 21 at Houston. They scored 21 at Cincinnati. The most that they've scored at home is 19. All right, that was against Arizona, and it was against Tennessee. They also scored 13 at home. And as bad as those numbers are, I mean, crying out loud, they're worse than they were one season ago. They're averaging 18.6 points a game, which is 28th in the NFL. You know, for the year, the 2020 season, the Jaguars averaged 19.1 points. That was 30th in the NFL. But as bad as it is, when you look at Miami, they're only averaging 15.8 points a game. Okay? Miami has got just an awful offense. So, I would lean more towards the high in the 28. I don't know how many Jaguars. If you were to say to Jag fans right now, 21 points, take it or leave it, this week in London against Miami, I'm going to leave it. I think they need more. I think maybe 24 could do it. But 21, to me, that's a little too tight in my particular opinion. You know, Miami has the worst third down defense in the NFL. And when you look at the Jaguars, that's still a little bit of a concern. Okay, I thought it was something that would begin to improve on a week-to-week basis. It hasn't. They're 18 of 55. They're only averaging 32.7% of their third downs. That's 29th in the NFL. And there's a lot of ways that we can look at that. There's a lot of blame that can be put on that, but that must improve, okay? That absolutely has to, and hopefully it does coming up as early as this particular Sunday. Before I get back to the Jaguars, what the hell is your baseball team doing tonight? Starting a reliever in this Game 5?
Interesting. I mean, but, you know, that's what happens when you don't have Clayton Kershaw. Where's my man? I got to start looking this stuff up. I got to follow baseball a lot more. Where's my man Dustin May? I don't know where my man is. I thought, you know, maybe we'd get to the long-haired fellow.
Right.
You know.
But Kershaw's got that problem with
Kershaw's
the forearm.
Kershaw's got that problem. You know, I know that the Dodgers are going to do a lot of pitching by committee. I could see Joe Kelly getting a couple of looks today. Urias.
Yep.
He's gonna get a lot of looks today. Yeah, but Gavin Lux getting the start. You know, I
Corey
Canoe,
Corey Knebel getting
Corey
the start.
Corey Knebel
okay. Getting the start. 266 games, 4 starts in his career. You're on the brink of elimination.
Yes.
And Dave Roberts hands him the baseball tonight in San Francisco?
Got to have some trust in him if you think that, you know, this is going to be the guy to lead you to the next round. I'm pretty sure he won't pitch more than 3.5, 4 innings, and then you'll start getting into your bullpen very, very deep. You know, it's do or die for the Dodgers. Like I said last night, I think whoever wins this series probably wins it all. So go Dodgers for me. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, Braves wait. Of course, they got it done with the Freddie Freeman home run, knocked off Milwaukee in 4. It will also be Boston and Houston in the American League Championship Series. But Julio Arias, man, his last outing was on the 9th of October. Okay, today's the 14th. He went 5 innings, 3 hits, a run, walked 1, struck out 5, got the victory. It'll be Logan Webb, who got the extra day rest. He pitched on October 8th. He went 7 2/3, 5 hits, no runs, no walks, 10 strikeouts. So San Francisco feels very good about their pitcher tonight, Logan Webb, at home. The total is 7. This looks like under across the board in this matchup. Should be interesting, though. San Francisco and Los Angeles, the winner moves on to the National League Championship Series. All right, getting a ton on the text line, as I thought that I would. 1764 says, Blue, how is it week 5? And a simple play like a quarterback sneak isn't ready. What is the preseason for? OTAs, has he never run a sneak before? If the ball comes out differently, then shouldn't it also come out different in college? Do college centers not set up in a four-point stance? I don't know the answer to that question, honestly, about a four-point stance. I don't know that. I can ask. Again, there are some things, some nuances and some things. I always say it, the offensive line to me is the hardest position to look at and grade. That's why I asked Searcy and Baselli and Huntington and others, because I trust their knowledge of the game. 49-90, Trevor was under center on the 4th-and-goal play where Hyde was tackled or stuffed. That was the most baffling part of the whole play, to go under center and not sneak it dumb. Did I say he was in shotgun? If I did, I apologize. He was in shotgun on 3rd down on the run where they reviewed it. But yes, he was under center on 4th down, and Carlos Hyde was to his right, and he was sniffed out immediately in that situation. Let's see, 96-19 here says, you're not going to win games playing scared. Okay? I feel Daryl Bevel is overthinking it. I don't think he's scared. Overthinking, yeah. He's not scared because they've thrown the ball deep. And you remember the numbers first couple weeks of the year? Trevor Lawrence led the NFL in passes of 25 yards or more. The reason why his completion percentage is not better is because he continues to throw the football downfield, albeit not as many last week against a very good Tennessee defense and in man coverage. At least they were very good against Jacksonville. Overthinking, perhaps. Demetrius Harvey and I tend to have a different agreement or opinion on the touchdown pass that went to Jacob Hollister. To me, I'm not running that. I'm not running a fade like that to Hollister. Even though it worked, okay? I think there's better things that you can do in that situation. And what we saw was that Trevor Lawrence completed a pass that only a few people in the world can, in fact, complete. But around the goal line, man, yeah, it's been sketch. It really has. They're moving the ball. Again, they had well over 400 yards in this game. They had nearly 200 rushing. They were moving the football. But you've got to find a way to punch it in. And then, of course, you can't rely right now on your field goal kicking. They're 0-for-5. Or actually, 0-for-5 games and not having made a field goal. First NFL team in the history of the game to go 5 games without a field goal. I mean, how does that happen? What can we compare that to? Is that like going 5 games without a 3-point shot? I mean, I don't know. Is that like going 5 Major League Baseball games without a home run? I mean, They didn't even have a field goal. And, you know, I may have been dead wrong about this because I said last night I did not think both kickers would get on the plane. I haven't heard either way. Okay? Is Matthew Wright on the plane right now to London? I'm under the assumption that Josh Lambeau is going to get an opportunity this weekend. I don't know that. It could very easily be Matthew Wright. Now, as I explained before and others have as well, because of the rules involved with the practice squad, he's already been called up twice. You can't do it a third time. If Matthew Wright is your kicker Sunday, he has to be added to the 53-man roster, which means someone else has to go. Could Josh, if Wright's your kicker, could Josh Lambeau be cut on Sunday? I mean, he was a healthy scratch a week ago. That could be a similar situation as well, where you just scratch him. And, man, that's bizarre to have two kickers on your 53, especially when you're talking about a winless football team. And you got key injuries now on the offensive line and key injuries at wide receiver and key injuries at linebacker. You need that extra position player. So that'll be something that we will certainly monitor as well. What are the Jags going to do as far as a kicker coming up against the Miami Dolphins? All right, let's take another break. Why don't we do that right now? Rafael Esparza coming up in about 15 to 20 minutes or so. We will check the money in Las Vegas, so we have that to do with Rafael Esparza with my bookie. In the meantime, stay with your questions. The best way to do so is on the text line. That is 641-1010. I am Rick Ballew. This is 92.5 FM.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, make sure you join us tomorrow. We're on the AM from 3 to 6 with high school football. All right, we'll do that for a few more weeks while high school football continues. 3 to 6 tomorrow on the AM. That is 1010. And Tim Brando, among others, scheduled to join us. Again, 3 to 6 on the AM. Speaking of college football, Sean Taylor is one of the greatest defensive players I've ever seen play the game. He was amazing at Miami. And what a complete, total lack of respect, in my opinion, to his memory with the Washington football team now to, you know, I guess retire his number and put his name up on the stadium. They announce it today. I mean, if you're going to do something, do it the correct way. Let everyone know in the preseason that it's going to happen. Let everyone know a couple of weeks prior that it's going to happen. Because I imagine that talk hosts in the District of Columbia and others are looking at this right now, and it smells because it's the perfect town for it. But it's a total cover-up. Here you have John Gruden, who's fired. You have 650,000 emails that have been confiscated and is being investigated on the now Washington football team. And it all centers around Dan Snyder and all the wrong things that he has done. Bruce Allen, who was, you know, I'd like to know what went on there. We do know that he was on the receiving end of a few of these John Gruden emails, but people want to know. And for one reason or another, the only thing that's leaked is Gruden. We don't know anything about Dan Snyder. We don't know anything about Bruce Allen. And with all of this nonsense going on, you take a guy like Sean Taylor and announce 72 hours before a kick that all of a sudden you're going to retire his number? I mean, give this man his respect. What an awful decision by the Washington football team. And that is awful. Think about that. This man deserves much more than that. This is my opinion. I think it's a major miss here by everyone involved. And I guess I should consider the town that they are in and just basically leave it at that. Baloo from the 53-59, realistically, how many touches should James Robinson get with Miami's weak run defense? Miami's weak run defense can be a little bit misguided because they've been trailing in all of their games, okay? They did battle back and forth on that opening weekend against New England, and they only, you know, mustered up like 245 yards in the entire game. Let's see here. They allow 133 yards a game they allow against the run. But again, that can be somewhat misleading. What I believe is this. James Robinson is at a career high so far. Last year had 22 carries four times or more. Okay? This year he hasn't carried it more than 18 times. If this is a one-possession football game, the more that he carries the football, the better off this football team is. So, as that number goes up, in my opinion, more of a chance of Jacksonville winning the game goes up. You can settle on Trevor Lawrence and his passing numbers. Not for me. 18 carries against Miami, I think it's toss a coin. But all of a sudden, if you're looking at, 22, 23, 24 carries against Miami, I think the Jaguars win. So you're going to have to look at it in that particular way. And, we'll see what ends up happening here. Yeah, defensively, they're allowing 133.6 yards a game. But again, that can be somewhat misused because teams are up in the second half, and when you're up in the second half, you're not going to be passing the football. You're going to be running the football. You're going to try to take time off the clock and get out of there. Their numbers, though, are terrible, okay? They only have 9 sacks. Jacksonville's worst in the NFL with 8. Miami only has 9. They allow 30.8 points a game, which is 30th in the NFL. They're dead last in their third down defense. They're 30th in total defense, allowing 422.2 yards a game. They're 26th in passing defense at 288.6. And, we know that Miles Jack didn't make the trip. For Miami, and I haven't heard yet, I haven't seen it. If I missed it, I apologize. But I'm under the impression that Devontae Parker is not going to make the trip. He has not practiced all week. He's got a hamstring and he's got a shoulder. All right, Will Fuller's missed a couple of games. He's on the IR. He won't play. Devontae Parker didn't play last week either. The one that really sticks out here is Xavien Howard. One of the better cornerbacks. He's been subject to trade talk and all of this type of stuff. But if he can't go, that is a huge jolt there for the Jaguars, and I'm never one that wants to see injuries. That's kind of my rule of thumb. But the Jaguars in the last couple of weeks, man, AJ Cann gone, DJ Chark gone, Brandon Linder gone, Miles Jack gone. They played 3 games without Roy Robertson Harris. They played last week without Tyson Campbell. So we'll see what happens. I just haven't seen anything on it. But I imagine definitely by tomorrow's show, we will know for sure what is going on there. Just a couple of other notables as far as the injuries. Let me get that for you because I know that comes into play. And that is certainly a very important situation for this team. I got to believe Dakota Allen is going to be your linebacker who's in on passing downs. He came in and only had a few plays last week because he injured his shoulder. They had to go to Shaq Quarterman. He practiced in full today and yesterday. So I would expect him to be the guy who replaces Miles Jack as well as in coverage. I don't think he'll wear the green dot, which means he gets communication, but I expect him to get the majority of those snaps. Marvin Jones Jr. took a personal day yesterday. Didn't practice on Wednesday. He practiced in full today. I don't know what to read into that personal day. It's unfair. It crossed my mind. He is such an incredibly positive person. And my guess is the losing has affected him as it's affected all of these players. But he had a personal day yesterday. Maybe it was just simply a personal day. I don't know if there's any more to it. But when you lose 20 games in a row, damn it, you can speculate. Laurente McCray, hamstring, full the last couple of days. He's missed the last game and a half. Ben Bartsch with a groin. Limited both days, starting right guard. Same with Ty Shatley, groin, limited both days, starting center. Tyson Campbell, the toe, limited both days. We'll see what's going on there. I want to see him back. Now, I want this kid to improve. I mean, second-round pick, 33rd pick overall. You know, first pick of the second round. I'm not giving up on him. Obviously, he needs to learn how to locate the ball, but play him. You know, let's see what he can do. Hopefully, he gets better. Roy Robertson-Harris, the ankle limited the last couple of days. Urban Meyer said a week ago Monday that he was going to play, and he didn't. Maybe this is the week. And we know for sure that Miles Jack did not make the trip with his back injury. He remains here in Jacksonville. The newly signed Rashad Coward did not make the trip with the ankle. And Adam Gotsis didn't practice today because of rest. I think he should be good to go. Just a few here for Miami that you would be absolutely concerned about. Really, the two biggest ones are Devontae Parker and Xavien Howard. Howard and Parker have not practiced Wednesday or Thursday. I read earlier today, right before I went on the show, that the thinking was that Parker was not going to make the trip to London. But I haven't seen that become official, and I haven't seen any language on Xavien Howard. So there you go. Preston Williams, Adam Shaheen, Byron Jones, the corner with the Achilles. That's always alarming. Jacoby Brissett and Brandon Jones, a safety. So their secondary really nicked up. We're all limited today and yesterday outside of Jones, who practiced in full. So he will be able to give it a go for Miami in this matchup against Jacksonville. All right, let's go to Las Vegas. Let's do that when we do return. We will check in with Rafael Esparza. He is with MyBookie, and MyBookie we enjoy and we love. They got everything up there. Hockey's underway, for those of you who do not know. Okay, we've already had a couple of nights of hockey. We've got the PGA Tour going on. We have a huge game tonight in the NFL. I'll ask them about that. You know, going into Philly, Tampa's got some huge injuries, so we'll spend some time on that. We'll talk about the Giants and Dodgers, pivotal game five to go to the National League Championship Series. Then, of course, the Sunday matchup, Jags-Dolphins, as well as the Gators and the Bayou Bengals. So all that coming up. We go to Las Vegas next. We will talk with Rafael Esparza.
1010X. Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Hi, we are at Mr. Chubby's in anticipation of tonight. What a night it is. Game 5, National League Championship Series. Tampa Bay on the road in Philadelphia to take on the Eagles. Let's bring in our good friend Rafael Esparza. He is with my bookie, and he goes into the night with Rick Ballew. Rafael, how you been?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
Doing really well. How did the money end up on that Fury Wilder trilogy? Clearly ended up being one of the great heavyweight fights that we've seen in a very long time.
Yeah, it was. We needed Fury. Wilder money came in late. I just think most of the bettors were just trying to hit the home run of the big +260 or higher that you can get on Wilder when he was coming in the ring. So that was good for us, Fury coming in. But what easily top 10 heavyweight fights I have witnessed in a very long time. So the trilogy lived up to his to what everyone thought it was going to be, and to have those two guys still standing in the 8th round, 9th round, 10th round was just unbelievable.
Yeah, I didn't see it live. It was the first time in a very long time I didn't buy a fight, and it ended up being a great one. And obviously, I checked it out a couple of days later. But okay, well, good, good news there. Now, I hate to segue to it because that was such a great fight, but there's a lot of talk now with Fury's brother. And what, one of the Pauls, is it Jake Paul? And those lines are already out. And I remember asking you about this going back a few weeks ago. He creates a tremendous amount of money, even though it's still looked at somewhat as like celebrity boxing.
Yeah, it's good. If I was the Paul brothers, I would probably take a seat back maybe till after the new year, because we have some big fights coming up. I think that's going to overshadow anything what the Paul brothers do. I mean, we still have Canelo fighting the weekend after Halloween. So that's going to be a big fight. We have Terrence Crawford fighting in November versus Sean Porter. So there's some really big names. But Tommy Fury and Jake Paul, I think Fury would probably have him -150, against Jake Paul. I would think that if you're a Paul brother, just sit back and wait till after 2022 to fight.
I know last night when I looked at it, it was even money. Logan Webb on the hill for San Francisco. It was supposed to be Julio, Arias. And then all of a sudden it's announced today by Dave Roberts, they're going to go to a reliever in Corey Knebel. So have things changed drastically at the window after that announcement?
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of bettors who bet this early are probably going to be disappointed that they have probably a live refund ticket in their wallet and not action with the pitching change. Most money now has been coming in on the Giants. They were -105 all last night and all this morning. Then when the pitching change came out, now the Giants are probably either -115, pretty much across the board, is -120 out there. So, yeah, the Giants are getting more of the action now with the pitching change. But it should be a great fight. I mean, that just tells me that everyone is going to be in the bullpen for the Dodgers. There's no clear starter. I would not be shocked if Knebel only lasts, two innings, and then here comes everybody else coming out of the bullpen.
Yeah, I kind of like the total under, but now, I don't know. It seems like they are going to go deep into these pens. And, it was sitting at 7? Has some money come in on the over?
No, it's been all under money. I think the wind's blowing in, so I think that's why. I forgot what the dimensions were coming in. It's not stand and winds like we saw at Dodger Stadium, but the wind was blowing in early this evening that I saw.
All right, so I've liked the under the whole time, but we'll see. All right, let's get to the game as well tonight. Tampa Bay, boy, are they injured, both offensively and defensively. Going into Philadelphia, the Eagles at 2-3. They got a big win a week ago, but they need another one here tonight.
Yeah, a little shocked. I mean, money was coming in starting on Wednesday morning, and then most of the morning today on Philadelphia. And so we actually moved it to 6.5 for a little bit, and then boom, Tampa Tom money came in, and now we're back up to 7. And I see a lot of other shops now back up to 7. I actually really thought this number was going to be a solid 6.5 by kickoff, but I guess people understand if Tampa Tom only has one arm, he can still throw for 6 touchdowns. So the Tampa Bay money continues to come in, and it's now 7. The total's actually gone up, too, to 52.5 to 53.
All right, as we move to Saturday, a lot of money coming in here on the Florida Gators. LSU down a couple of DBs, down their best wide receiver. Florida getting back in Elam, one of their better defensive players, all the money coming in right now on Florida?
Yes. And then I think LSU lost another defensive guy today as well when I was reading some reports. They're just, boy, I mean, LSU, if you're a school that has 3 letters, you're going to be looking for a head coach, LSU, USC, USF. I mean, there's a lot of schools that might be looking for head coaches. I just think Florida is probably just going to overmatch LSU and beat them in Baton Rouge. How sad is this game? This game was scheduled to be one of the either 2:30 or 6 o'clock ESPN game, and how bad LSU has been playing. It bumped them to an early afternoon game, and it's homecoming for them. So Florida Gators are going to probably give the seniors a bad homecoming, remember.
All right, the last game I'll ask you about, it, and I remember a couple weeks ago looking at Georgia, they were, what was it, 18.5-point favorite against Arkansas, and I think it ended up being 37-0. I was dead wrong on that. I look at Kentucky now after what they did to LSU, after what they did 2 weeks ago to Florida, and I get they're going to Athens, but Kentucky, 21.5, 22-point underdog, same situation here. Is this Georgia to cover?
Yeah, I think so. And this number's dropping. It was 23.5, 24 on Monday, and then now Kentucky money continues to come in. I don't think maybe people think it's basketball and not football, but yeah, I like Georgia. I'm going to wait to see. It's a 3:30 game. I think this number's going to continue to drop. If I can get 21.5 or 21, I'm going to be all over Georgia. I would not be shocked. I think Kentucky scores maybe 7, maybe 10 points, but I think Georgia just out-muscles them. Their defense is just really good.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap with Urban Meyer. Now, typically when you go to London and there's a bye after, that can be the ripe opportunity to make a coaching change, even though Shad Khan spoke on it, you know, after the matchup in Cincinnati. For the record, I don't think anything happens. But what about the gamblers? Have people been putting props on Urban Meyer this weekend to be the next head coach who was fired?
They are. Most people had those props up after his bar incident. But I think Jacksonville gets their first W out of U.S. I think they get their W this weekend. I think they beat Miami on Sunday. I won't be watching the game because it's English Premier League soccer, and I don't want to watch a Dolphins-Jaguars game that early in the morning.
Who would watch that with soccer? Yeah. I mean, who's going to argue with you there?
Manchester United, Ronaldo's going to be on my TV. But I think Jacksonville, they're not that bad. I mean, their defense has been safe. I'm just not sold on Tua. And I don't think the Miami Dolphins are sold on Tua. So I think Jacksonville gets their first W this week against Miami.
Yep, I'm with you. And you're getting 3.5 points. I absolutely agree with you. Hey, just for the record, when you had those props up and Gruden, I mean, we heard he resigned. He was fired. Was it either or for the prop? Was it fired specifically or resignation specifically? And if so, did the books pay out?
We paid out. We heard that first it was reported that he was fired. Then it was reported, I think, after the Monday Night Football game. I think on ESPN they said that he resigned. So we just paid both out. I mean, it is what it is. It's not like we lost the house. We were coming off a losing Sunday anyway. So hey, what's a little bit more money to give out? since the bettors finally won on a Sunday, so we paid both out. But I mean, we're going to get all that money back when we put odds on who's going to be the new Raider head coach. So it's going to be interesting. Don't sleep on Byron Leftwich, and he could be a big sleeper to get that job.
Byron Leftwich, Eric Bieniemy, right? Two leading candidates.
Yeah, I think Bieniemy goes to USC. I think he goes to USC. Leftwich goes to the Raiders. That's my two team parlay.
All right, we'll see. Tell us about my bookie. There's a lot happening in sports right now.
Yeah, baseball. The NHL dropped the puck, and then now we have the NBA that starts next week. So it's a full thing. Go over at my bookie. Sign up today. Get that 50% sign up bonus. We have some great football games, some great college football, and then of course we have some great boxing coming up next month as well. Don't just sleep on those heavyweights. So jump over to my bookie. Sign up today.
Your boys in Vegas had a rude awakening for the first game ever for the Seattle Kraken the other night.
We did, but we showed off some new pyrotechnics and some new graphics on the ice. If you haven't seen that, it was pretty cool up there, cracking on the ice. And then I would highly recommend see what kind of show. You have to, if you're going to go to Vegas, you have to go to a Golden Knight game just for the show itself.
Yeah, I'm looking it up right now. I want to see in Boston if you know, of course, last year with the pods and everything that did take place, you were playing the same eight teams. I'm looking right here. I don't see anything yet, but man, I'd love to be able to come out. Actually, it's on the third day of March, Boston in Vegas. And, of course, that'll be conference tournament time as well, probably a week or so before the NCAA tournament. Rafael, always a pleasure, young man. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Take it easy. Have a great week.
Right, there he goes, Rafael Esparza. All right, let's come back, put the final touches on things right here on this Thursday night in Ponte Vedra at Mr. Chubby's. We'll take you up until 8 o'clock.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, we are wrapping things up, and it's going to be a fun night. Hopefully you'll enjoy it. A lot of good stuff on NFL as well as Major League Baseball. That's going to be a long night, long game. That'll go well into Friday morning, that matchup there between San Francisco and Los Angeles. All right, again, join us tomorrow, 3 to 6. We will be on the AM, okay? That is 1010. So hopefully you'll join us there. And we're going to do it that way for, I don't know, another 4, 5, 6 weeks, whatever it is, until high school comes to a conclusion. So, again, we'll be on the AM tomorrow from 3 until 6. Well, the very latest on the Jags, maybe something will be known tomorrow on the kicker. I don't know. I can only guess what will be happening there. And also really would like to find out what's going on with Xavien Howard, the defensive back for the Miami Dolphins, already well under the impression that Devontae Parker, their wide receiver, is not going to play. You know, I watched that game, and it felt like really the only two guys that were doing anything were Mike Gesicki, the tight end, and Myles Gaskin, the running back. Didn't really see a lot out of Jaylen Waddle in the game either. Of course, he was their first-round selection this past year out of Alabama for the Miami Dolphins. So that'll be pretty interesting to see what ends up happening there as well. All right, Tim Brando will join us tomorrow. We'll hear from the Philly Rooster. We'll hear from others as well. Again, we will be on from 3 to 6, and that'll be on the AM, which is 1010 on the AM dial. Tonight, I do want to thank, moments ago, we did hear from Rafael Esparza with MyBookie and MyBookie.com. Also, tonight, who else did we hear from? Oh, yes, of course. We heard from Demetrius Harvey, who is the beat writer for Big Cat Country, and also with SI All Gators. He is their deputy editor. We got our picks coming up again tomorrow, and I think we both went 7-3 last week, RJ, even though I had LSU, you had Kentucky. Okay. We both had UNC, and Florida State won a ball game. Let's see. What do we have differently? You had Buffalo over Kansas City. Okay. So you got that one right. And I had Tennessee over Jacksonville. I am going to pick Jacksonville this week, though. I don't care. I'm going to do it. It's as simple as that. So thank you to RJ Saunders. Thank you to Michael Phillips. Thank you to Mr. Chubbies. That's it. My name's Rick Ballew. Again, tomorrow, 3 to 6, we'll be on the AM. That is 1010XL. Have a great night. Enjoy those games.